You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone and welcome along to the Punt Podcast. Dave Kellner here in the presenter's chair. We're going to hear from Andy Excel and Derek McGovern on the four televised Premier League games in due course. We've also got the FWA guest Tom Hopkinson, the chief sports reporter for the Sunday Mirror and the Sunday People, on the podcast to reflect on the Champions League midweek and talk about the possibility of a Club World Cup in the not too distant future as well. That's all to come on the podcast. Pete Farris, Gaff Bushlowski, Al Ross will provide their bets in the Football League, and we've got El Clasico this weekend as well. Sam Norris is with us for a tip on that one. First of all, a warm welcome to Andy Excel. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Is this a guest appearance for you?
I missed 2 weeks. One of them was the International Week, which I know you two chaps would like to miss as well. So I'm not taking any stick for that. And last week I was busy elsewhere. Andy, what have I missed anyway on the podcast? Have you been putting up bets, winning bets left, right? And I know you've been putting up bets, but winning bets left, right and centre.
No, I'm still sticking to my boss's agenda of don't give out winners.
That's William Hill's Andy Excel. William Hill's Andy Excel on the podcast. And Derek McGovern joins us as well. Good morning to you, Mr. McGovern.
Good morning. Fresh from yet another winner last week. You might have missed it, David.
I did miss it, actually.
Liverpool to win without conceding. I think that was my nap, wasn't it? Well, it should have been. If it wasn't, it should have been.
Let's get stuck into this weekend then. We start with the Saturday tea time fixture, Leicester versus the Hammers. Leicester are in the market at 23-20, the draw 23-10. West Ham are in the betting at 5-2. Enhanced odds, Jamie Vardy to score and Leicester to win, was 11-5, that's been enhanced to 5-2, and Marko Arnautovic to score and West Ham to win was 9-2, that's been boosted to 11-2. Derek, let's start with you here. Claude Puel was chastised by the fans for his negative football when he was in charge of Southampton. So it's a surprise to see Leicester defending so badly. Since a run of three successive Premier League clean sheets back in January, and no side in the Premier League have conceded more goals than Leicester City. And just looking at the makeup of this match, I can see goals in this one too.
Yeah, definitely. There will be. Both teams to score look absolutely nailed on. That said, West Ham won 2-0 at the King Power in May. Only one team scored then. It was West Ham, both of them. And West Ham had David Moyes as manager then, so that doesn't say much for Leicester. You mentioned Claude Puel. I think it's just difficult to say what he actually brings to the table, apart from garlic and black pepper. I can't get a handle on what kind of team Leicester are under him. They lost their home to Everton recently, so the suspicion is bad. I watched them in the second half at Arsenal on the other night. I thought they were atrocious. I missed the first 40 minutes. I only switched on when Arsenal started roasting them. I heard they were good for the first half. Second half, they just gave up. It was a craven performance by them after the break. And I thought to myself, they went down in my book as 1-2 opposed on that 45 minutes alone. They'd beaten only Newcastle and Huddersfield in their last six, which is nothing to brag about, especially the Newcastle or Huddersfield. And I'd have to say that West Ham look good things here.
West Ham, the value, according to Derek, in the betting at 5-2. The bad news for the Hammers is they've been beaten in their last couple of games. Andy, 1-0 by Brighton and Spurs. They were unlucky to find Hugo Lloris in actual form last weekend, though. That was, the first decent performance he's put in the best part of 3 months, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, they're both teams that are trying to find their way for me. I said this about West Ham a few weeks back. I think if they get on a run, they'll fly, but you can never trust them. And it's a bit like that with Leicester. I just wonder with Leicester, you look at, like you say, they're conceding goals, but you've got players like Kasper Schmeichel, Harry Maguire, Ben Chilwell, all good players at the back. I'm wondering whether some of them are thinking, where might I be in January? Maybe they start looking over the fence at the greener grass. So I just wonder whether that's happening at Leicester a bit. So I don't really trust either team. You know, as I said the other week about West Ham, they can't defend and Leicester can't defend. So like Derek says, both teams to score is the way to go here for me. I don't trust either team, so both teams to score at 8-11 is the one for me.
Yeah, slightly bigger price than I anticipated on both teams to score as well. I can see goals in this game, 8-11 as Andy just mentioned, for both to find the back of the net. And if you fancy over 3.5 in the game as well, that could be definitely worth a look in this match. And over 3.5 goals in the game is 5-2. That's a massive price. 5-2 over 3.5 goals. Over 2.5 goals is even money as well. So a couple of potential angles in Leicester versus West Ham. What about Crystal Palace versus Arsenal? Palace 3-1. The draw 29-10. Arsenal 17-20. This is the first of two TV games on Sunday, 1:30 kickoff. Enhanced odds as well. Wilfred Zaha to score and Palace to win was 5-1. That's been enhanced to 6-1. And if you fancy Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to score in an Arsenal win, that was 15-8. That's been boosted to 9-4. And Andy, as an Arsenal fan, it must have been an absolute joy to watch that performance against Leicester on Monday night. And since Unai Emery came in, those special incisive performances where Mesut Ozil plays like he can do have become more frequent. It was a masterclass from the Gunners.
Yeah, it was second half. Like Derek said, right about the first half, Leicester could easily have been ahead, maybe even with two goals at half time, which is a bit of a pattern I'll come back to. But I mean, against Palace, Arsenal have won 8 of the last 10 against them. They've won 10 in a row, as you say, 7 of those in the Premier League. But all 7 in the Premier League, they weren't in front at half-time. They were all draws at half-time. So draw and Arsenal is where I'm looking at 4-1. But Arsenal at 17-20 is a decent price, which, you know, I think that's all right against Palace because I don't think they're in any great shakes at the moment. And Arsenal are full of confidence. So, yeah, Arsenal at 17-20. But maybe if you were looking for a better price, the draw and then Arsenal on double result.
I think that's an understatement as well, saying Palace aren't any great shakes at the moment. They've lost the last 3. Those losses have come against Bournemouth, Wolves and Everton, all teams that will be chasing at the very least a top 10 finish, but not exactly the Premier League's elite. And I think more concerning, Derek, than those results is the fact they've only scored once in their last 5 in all competitions and only 3 times in their last 8 Premier League matches. So the pressure is mounting on Roy Hodgson.
Yeah. All those statistics you just mentioned can be explained by one word, Hodgson, or the Hodgesaurus, as I call him. I mean, you know, when you're losing to Everton, now, I have a rule, and well, I have many rules in betting, most of them useless, but one I always stick by is if a team's getting, you know, pulverised, well, not pulverised, but getting beat comfortably by Everton, they seem to oppose. That's what happened to Palace last week. I've watched them a couple of times recently. And again, they're like a poor man's Leicester. I can't see any passion. I just can't understand how Hodgson escapes the flak for what he's doing there. He's a manager. He flirts for years with a club before eventually going down. I mean, that doesn't necessarily make him a bad manager, but it does make him a lousy day. Last season, Arsenal won 4-1 at home to Palace. They won 3-2 at Palace. And they're going to score a bundle here. They were excellent on Monday night against Leicester. I wouldn't get too worked up because I thought Leicester down tools once, you know, very, very quickly when Arsenal went ahead. But it was impressive. They've won a million games on the run. The only thing that puts me off slightly, the 17-20, is the fact that they're in Thursday night duty. In the Europa League. But it is a home match, that one. They're in London again at the weekend. I think Arsenal look absolutely good things here. And yet, you're right, you mentioned an Emery. I wasn't sure what to get. I mean, he's got a great track record. But he seems to be doing everything right at the moment. I wanted to put the boot in on Arsenal after the first 2 games of the season when they were softened up by 2 of the big teams. But since then, they've done absolutely nothing wrong.
Arsenal to win and both teams to score could be a bet here as well. That's 21-10. If you think Palace can maybe break that goal drought, that's 21-10 in the market. If you are looking the other way and think Arsenal are going to win this game without conceding, that's 23-10. Arsenal to win to nil. So a few bets that could be of interest on that one. Let's move on to Manchester United versus Everton. 4 p.m. kickoff on Sunday. Manchester United 3-4 to win the game. The draw 11-4. Everton in the betting at 15-4. Enhanced odds, Romelu Lukaku to score and Manchester United to win was 7-4. That's been enhanced to 2-1. Richarlison to score in an Everton win was 17-2. That's been boosted to 10-1. Derek, if he hadn't done so earlier in the season, Jose Mourinho is driving me up the wall at the moment. He didn't get the players that he wanted in the summer, all very well and good, but he spent just short of £400 million since his appointment. But the majority of his signings have been dismal. And Fred, who was his most expensive purchase in the summer, was an unused substitute in Tuesday night's chastening defeat against Juventus. They didn't lay a glove on Juventus, and watching that as a Manchester United fan was pretty frustrating.
Yeah, it was. And yet, half the United fans still seem to be behind a manager. Are they nuts? Why on earth would you be behind this manager with the football he's serving up? Were it not for the second-half performance against Newcastle and maybe a decent enough performance against Chelsea, he surely would have gone, because they are the only bright spots in a dismal season. And the fact that the 10th, imagine if it was, let's just say, for instance, if it was David Wagner, and he'd spent £400 million at Huddersfield over the last 2 years. He'd be challenging for the league title, without question. Because, you know, the £400 million, it's not something you find in your back pocket. That's a hell of a lot of money. And despite spending that money, United have gone steadily worse. All their big players under Mourinho have gone steadily worse. The manager is living on past glories. I can't understand how he's still in the job. I don't like talking about people losing the job, of course I don't. But that's the currency nowadays in managers, when we're talking about Premier League managers. And some of the things he said after the game the other night, it was ridiculous. And one other thing, by the way, you know when they pulled back, when they went 2-2 after the Chelsea game?
Yeah.
The only thing he was concerned about was himself putting that three fingers up to the fans.
I know, it's embarrassing,
it's
isn't it?
It's all about him, isn't it? I think he's an absolute disgrace. That said, 3-4 to beat Everton, I'm liking the look of it. Because I just can't have Everton. I just can't have them. I think they're playing some tidy football, and then it all goes wrong when they have to defend and when they get to the opposition's box. And I think United will win this convincingly. I really do.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I can't believe what I'm hearing here, Derek.
Yeah, I know. That's how little I rate Everton.
They have won their last three Premier League games, Everton, against Palace, Leicester and Fulham. They've looked very good since Richarlison has been deployed as that focal point in attack, with Sigurdsson, Bernard and Walcott just in behind. Sigurdsson's playing well at the moment as well. Manchester United have a goal difference of -1 in the Premier League this season as well. That's the first time they've had a negative goal difference after 9 games in the league since the early 90s. That's how badly Manchester United are playing. And speaking of badly, Lukaku, we've got to talk about Lukaku, Mr. Excel. Jonathan Liu, who's been on this podcast before and writes for The Independent, he noted in his recent piece, on Tuesday night his stats read, goals, none, shots on target, none, shots off target, none, assists, none, chances created, none, tackles, none, interceptions, none, fouls committed, none, fouls suffered, none. Offsides, one. So that's where he broke the deadlock. One offside. He just did absolutely nothing. And Andy, that's been the case for the entire season.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about him briefly last week. I just think, I've always thought he's a playground bully. He'll beat up smaller teams, but come up against the proper defender and proper defence, and he's like, he's completely lost. And that was, up against that defence the other night. He just looks completely out of his depth, and he is. I just, United, what can you say? That game against Juventus the other night, that was a Champions League contender playing against the Europa League team.
Yeah.
And that's what Man United are at the moment. They're a Europa League team, and that's a disgrace. The good news is they're playing another Europa League team at best. So I'm with Derek. Even though I want to slaughter Man United relentlessly at the moment, I still think the price is getting too big. So I think I'd be with United as well, even though Everton are in decent nick. You don't get that price about Man United at home. And they're still good enough to beat Everton, surely.
I'm completely against you two. I like Everton plus one in the game, which is currently available at 21-20. Admittedly, Everton have a pretty dismal record against Manchester United, all told. Interesting one, though, that with that difference of opinion from this side of the studio. You two guys going with Manchester United. Do you think are you looking Manchester United minus one then, even, Derek, at 9-5?
No, I wouldn't say that. They're not good enough to steamroll at Everton. Because when Everton lose, they very rarely get steamrolled. They're just not a very good side. I'm not saying United are anything brilliant. I mean, you mentioned Lukaku and all those stats, all the non-stats. You know, you forgot to add one. How much is he now worth? Oh, how many pounds is he now worth? None. I've had my reservations about Lukaku. I used to the arguments I've had with Evertonians in pubs about him when he was scoring those goals for them. If I'm a man who doesn't rate Mo Salah, imagine what I think about Romelu Lukaku. Man United, 3-4, you don't have, it's a big enough price to just have a go on it itself. You don't need to look for minus ones on that one.
Just before we move on to Tottenham versus Manchester City, Monday night football, let's get the thoughts on El Clasico with Sam Norris.
This weekend sees the first El Clasico since 2007 that won't feature either Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo. After Ronaldo's pre-season move to Juventus and Messi's arm injury picked up against Sevilla last week, one of the biggest games in club football is going to be missing the two defining footballers of the era for the first time in over a decade. But still, there remains plenty of intrigue about this game, largely because of Real's incredibly sluggish start to the season. The word is that Julian Lopetegui's head is on the chopping block already, and the La Liga campaign isn't even 10 games old yet. With Antonio Conte reporting already being sounded out for the job, Lopetegui would have wanted much more than a scruffy 2-1 win against Victoria Pilsen in midweek at the Bernabeu. The last thing an under-fire Real Madrid boss will want or need on his plate is a trip to the Nou Camp for a Clasico. And whilst Barca were slightly slow out of the traps themselves this season, dropping early points to Girona, Leganes, Bilbao and Valencia, they've returned to the summit of La Liga via a 4-2 win against Sevilla last week, a game that I expected them to struggle in. Messi was instrumental in firing Barca to a 2-goal lead after just 12 minutes in that, and although this is obviously going to be harder without the little magician in the side, they showed in midweek against Inter that they can cope without the Argentine. That 2-0 win against better opposition reads considerably better than Real's Champions League victory in midweek. Los Blancos are without a win in four La Liga games now, and they've lost three of those and have only scored one goal across that four-game stretch. Defeats to Alaves and Levante the last twice will be particularly galling for Madrid followers. It's a fan base that are not exactly renowned for its patience with underperforming managers and players, so expect the pressure to be at an all-time high on Sunday afternoon. I don't think they handle it, and Barca look a very attractive proposition at even money at home. That's the Nap by a long way this week. For an ex-best, it's an extremely obvious selection in this fixture, but it does keep landing, and that's for a red card to be shown in the game. The fact that it's an eye-wateringly short price at 11-8 may well temper enthusiasm, and I do understand that, but it's landed in the last two El Clasicos, or three of the last four, or four of the last six, or five of the last eight, or six of the last nine, whichever stat you prefer, they're all true. Perhaps a better way to get the red card on side would be to back a Real Madrid red. They're the ones under the most pressure here. They're rightfully underdogs away from home and are floundering in the league. And five of the last six El Clasico red cards have gone to Real Madrid players. So as the next best this week, look at a Real Madrid player to see red. But Barcelona, even money at home, has to be the Nap.
OK, that's Sam's bet for El Clasico. Now let's talk about Tottenham versus Manchester City. 8 p.m. kickoff, Monday night football. Spurs 16-5 to win the game. The draw 16-5. Manchester City in the betting at 3-4. Enhanced odds. Harry Kane to score and Spurs to win was 4-1. That's been boosted to 9-2. And if you fancy Sergio Aguero to score in a City win, that was 8-5. That's been enhanced to 9-5. This is hashtag your odds as well. So if there's a bet that you like the look of that's not on the website or on the app, tweet at William Hill using that hashtag your odds. Andy, I think Mauricio Pochettino's done a pretty good job to keep Spurs in contention this season. They've had major injury setbacks and they've had to deal with Hugo Lloris's blundering every other game as well. Another mad decision on Wednesday night from the Spurs shot stopper. We'll almost certainly see them exiting the Champions League at the group stages. And they found life tough in Europe in recent history. And if there's one game you don't want on the back of that slightly deflating 2-2 draw with PSV, it's this one.
I'm not sure about the restart. I think that might have been very shrewd. He's either wanting to be first to the bar or he needs to get public transport home, so he's beating the rush. I can only be with City here. I think they're really hitting their stride now, Man City, and they've got De Bruyne back. I know Spurs have got Eriksen back as well, but De Bruyne is a better player than Eriksen, even though Eriksen's really good. This is another price at 3-4. You're not going to get that very often on City, and I think they're good value to beat Spurs. The other one in terms of a goal scorer I picked out was Sterling scored 4 in the last 3 against Tottenham. Mm. So you can have him to score first at 5-1 and 7-5 any time. Throw that in. I think they won the game at Spurs last season 3-1. Same score and Sterling any time is 22-1. That wouldn't be too bad.
Nice. A Man City unbeaten in their last 15 Premier League games now since that 3-2 loss to Manchester United back in April. They've conceded just 6 goals in those 15 games as well, and never more than once in a match. And they do look imperious at the moment. They followed that 0-0 draw with Liverpool, with wins against Burnley and Shakhtar, 5-0 and 3-0 respectively. And the balance of power in this fixture has obviously shifted in recent times as well. Spurs have lost 10 of their last 15 in the Premier League against Manchester City. So we talked about 3-4 on Manchester United against Everton earlier on, Derek. What about this 3-4 City travelling to Spurs on Monday night?
Yeah, I like it just as much. City beat them 4-1 at the Etihad last Man in the 3-1 at Wembley. And that victory at Wembley, by the way, came after City had just lost 3 matches in a row. In other words, they were there for the taking. Remember those 2 games against Liverpool in the Champions League and also against Man United? 3 defeats in a row, and then they went to Wembley in there and give Tottenham a bit of a hiding. I don't see why that's not going to happen again on Monday. Yeah, you mentioned that Eriksen. I love him as a player. Fantastic. But he isn't Kevin De Bruyne. And, you know, City have done nothing wrong without De Bruyne. Maybe lost a couple of points at Wolves, maybe. A drew at Liverpool, not a disgrace, but they've got the main man back, the man who should have been player of the season by a zillion miles last season. I'm with him in the team now. They're only going to get stronger. Whether Liverpool can live with him in the Premier League remains to be seen, but City are going to pick up 3 points here. But get your money on 3-4, wait till 10 o'clock Monday night and go and beat down a bookie's door to get paid out.
Okay, 3-4 City for both Andy and Derek. Andy giving you some exotic scorelines there as well. Andy, given what we've been through the TV games here, just deducing what you've mentioned, it's going to be a bad weekend for William Hill, the bookmaker, isn't it?
Yeah, I was funny you said that. I was just about to say, you put Arsenal in at 17-20 and the two Manchesters at both at 3-4. Throw in Chelsea and Liverpool at their short prices. So that fivefold, that's 15-2. If all 5 of them win this weekend, we're really struggling. But I can see it happening. I'm a bit worried about this weekend.
What about the Naps then? Andy, go on. You lead off with your best bet.
Right, I'm going to shock you all here. Newcastle.
Are you really? 11-4?
I was going to go for the same one.
Were you both going to go for Newcastle?
Yeah. Isn't that incredible?
Do you know, I thought they played really well last weekend. You know, they've still got that problem. Can they score? But I've got a feeling there's going to be a game where it's the London bus theory. They'll knock in about 4 or 5 against somebody. The last 2 or 3 away performances haven't been bad. Then, you know, they were 2-0 up at United and got done in the second half. They drew 0-0 against one of the lower teams. Can't remember which one it was. I mean, it might have been Cardiff. And then they had a narrow defeat at City. So they're better away than at home. So, and Southampton, I've said enough about Southampton this year. They're going down. So, Newcastle for me.
Okay, Newcastle at 11-4. Derek?
That was my one. I thought I was safe with that because I didn't think anyone would be stupid enough. Anyone else would be stupid enough.
Do you want me to go next? Do you want me to go next, Derek?
You go next. You go next.
I'm going to go with Arsenal and both teams to score in that game against Crystal Palace. I do think Arsenal will win, but Their modus operandi at the moment is to concede one and then score more. And I think that's what will happen on Sunday. So I'm going Arsenal to win and both teams to score, which is available at 21 to 10. So that's my NAP selection. Derek, have you worked out yours yet?
Yeah, I'm going to go for City to beat Tottenham. I just can't see. I can see it being a comfortable win for City. 2-0 by half-time, 4-1 by full-time.
Okay, that treble pays just under 20 to 1. Newcastle 11 to 4. Arsenal and both teams to score at 21 to 10. And City at 3 to 4, a 19.34 to 1. Andy, thank you for your company.
Pleasure.
I know, Derek, you're going to stay with us. We're going to be speaking to Tom Hopkinson from the Sunday Mirror and the Sunday People next, reflecting on Champions League and talking about the possibility of a Club World Cup in the future as well.
Check out the all-new Bet Boosts on your sports Accas. You can boost trebles and bigger with a maximum stake of £20. You get one every day on mobile or the new WilliamHill.com site. Just click the boost button on your bet slip.
Now, as promised, it's a delight to be joined by Tom Hopkinson, the chief sports reporter for the Sunday Mirror and the Sunday People, our FWA guest this weekend. First of all, a warm welcome to you, Tom.
Thanks very much, Dave. Good to be with you.
How are you? Did you enjoy the midweek action?
I did, yeah. Particularly Derby's 4-1 win at West Brom, but I know we're not here to talk about that, are we?
We're not. It might be a couple of years before Derby are back in the Champions League,
no,
Tom.
Two, three matches.
Let's reflect on the Champions League results for midweek and any key talking points, starting with the Manchester United defeat against Juventus, beaten 1-0. Paulo Dybala with the only goal in the game after 17 minutes, but yet another abject Manchester United performance at Old Trafford, Tom. And they're becoming a regularity now.
Well, they are. I mean, they look like they might just have started to turn a corner in the last couple of weeks, Manchester United. And I know there's been a lot of criticism following the game, particularly Romelu Lukaku's performance. But this is a Juventus side that would go up against anyone in the world, and also a side being tipped to win the Champions League. Real Madrid would struggle against them. Barcelona would struggle against them. Liverpool, Manchester City as well. So to only lose 1-0, I think we shouldn't be reading too much into that when you mentioned Dybala, but obviously Ronaldo going back to his spiritual home, if you like, and also at the other end of the field with Bonucci and Chiellini. I mean, these are class players all across the park. I think the manner of Manchester United's performance, I think that obviously upset one or two people, but I think we have to, you know, in the old football cliche, put your foot on the ball a little bit and just have a look at what a good side they lost to before we worry about piling into them too much. I would still be more worried about the first 70 minutes against Newcastle, for example, than losing 1-0 to Juventus over 90 minutes.
Okay, Manchester United, by the way, if you fancy a real outsider for the Champions League, 33-1. Manchester City at the top of the market at 4-1. Barca are 5-1. Juventus 11-2. Bayern Munich 8-1. Liverpool 8-1. PSG and Real Madrid both 10-1. 14s and bigger the rest. And Manchester City, this is the trophy, Derek, they covet most, I think, Manchester City. And they are looking good. Beat Shakhtar Donetsk 3-0 away from home. They did what was expected of them, but they are seemingly cranking through the gears now, this City side.
Yeah, but they haven't been tested in the Champions League. And whenever they do get tested in the Champions League, they come up short. We've seen it season after season, last season in particular against Liverpool. So, yeah, you know, they probably deserve their place among the market leaders, but I wouldn't be prepared to put a penny on them at the moment. I mean, you know, they're going to go a long way. But, you know, generally, teams that win the Champions League have been pretty much close beforehand, and City have been miles away. Mm. As for United, I mean, it wasn't... I mean, if those Italian players that Tom mentioned are that good, how come Italy failed to make the World Cup? It wasn't so much the performance of Man United. It was Mourinho's comments afterwards that really stick in the craw. Since the draw, we knew it would be a fight with Valencia for second place, he says. I mean, that's almost a sackable offence in my eyes. In terms of lowering expectations, it's gone past David Moyes and is on to Roy Hodgson levels. I mean, it's absolutely diabolical. You can't even turn up for the match on time. It's like, you know, that's the second time they turned up late for the game. Sunday league stuff. They'll have Phil Jones carrying the valuables bag next. It'll be more valuable than any of the players. Mourinho walked the final half mile to the ground. I heard the other night. Maybe he was trying to find that dressing room that he's lost.
I love this though, Dale. We criticise football for being they're not men of the people anymore, footballers and managers. And you know, think back to the days of Jimmy Greaves getting the bus to do a game with all the players, and then we criticise someone for doing it.
Just to pick up on something Derek mentioned there, Tom, about Manchester City and having failed to win the Champions League the past few seasons, do you see them being more equipped to have success in the Champions League this season? Have they changed anything in the interim?
I don't know how much has changed from last season, really. I mean, look, they are equipped to go a long way in the competition. But for Pep Guardiola, I mean, it's been many years now, hasn't it, since when he has had a club that's gone deepish. They've not been able to kick on. Obviously, didn't have the success with Bayern Munich that he'd enjoyed at Barcelona either. So I think we're getting to the point now where as much imagination as he's brought to Manchester City, people are going to start questioning why they aren't kicking on and getting to that final. I mean, you know, look, they were streets ahead of Liverpool in the Premier League last year. So why couldn't they beat them over a couple of games in the quarter final? I agree with Dale. I think they're still a way away, and they probably need to start making the semis year after year after year before they can finally take that next step into the final. And then, of course, it might even then be a couple of finals before they eventually win one.
Okay, the Wednesday night fixtures, Spurs and Liverpool were both in action on Wednesday night. Spurs went to PSV Eindhoven and drew that game 2-2, Tom. Spurs have just struggled in Europe, and I mentioned it earlier on in the podcast as well. Hugo Lloris is just so badly out of form and made a rash decision on Wednesday night, which virtually you would think puts them out of the competition.
Yeah, he's made one or two rash decisions on and off the field, hasn't he, in the last couple of months. And he seems a bit of a... I think what's been going on for Hugo Lloris off the field really seems like it's impacted on some of that decision-making on the field since he's come back. And really out of sorts for him. I was speaking to a Tottenham fan this morning as well, and she just said, look, I don't know why I expect any different. This is what Tottenham always do. And a great point I saw on Twitter after the game against Eindhoven that Tottenham had bragged earlier on in the year about being the only place, the only stadium, their new stadium, of course, this is to watch Champions League football this season. And of course, it looks like they could be out before they've even moved in. But they were unlucky, I thought. I mean, yes, they should have shut up shop. And yes, Lloris had his moment of madness. But I thought they did really well to come back from going a goal behind in Eindhoven. So, yeah, again, much to work on for them, though, if they want to go any further next year.
And you've been quite critical, Derek, of Mauricio Pochettino in the past, in terms of he gets all these plaudits, but he's not won anything with Spurs. Do you still feel that way, or has he done well with the injuries the squad have suffered to be in the position in the Premier League they are anyway?
I'm not interested in injuries. These teams have enough money to go out and buy replacements. No, injuries is a red herring. I don't know. I mean, I thought he did great last season to take Tottenham so close, given they didn't really have a home ground. But they seem to be going backwards at the moment. I don't know what it is. Maybe, you know, we hear often that when a manager's been so long at a club, the players stop listening. You know, I'm not saying that's the case at the moment. But it's just something doesn't seem quite right at Spurs. And I wouldn't be in a hurry to, you know, they're not going to get out of the group now, are they? Which is, you know, it's a shock for them, isn't it?
Yeah. And Liverpool beat Red Star Belgrade 4-0. The goals came from Mo Salah, who got a couple. Sadio Mane got one, and Roberto Firmino got the other one. So the big three, in effect. And Mohamed Salah, Derek, he became the quickest player to score 50 goals for Liverpool. Just 65 matches it's taken him, Derek.
I know. Imagine how many he'd get if he was any good. Seriously, you're not going to change my opinion, Dave. Again, all the plaudits he gets. You know, they were playing the blind school. Scored two goals against him. Could have had about five or six. He didn't. Missed some glorious chances. And yet gets all the acclaim, despite being largely crap for the 90 minutes. So I just can't have it. Sorry.
Do you think Liverpool have more of a opportunity than the betting suggests, Tom, here to win the Champions League? They're double the price of Manchester City. I get the feeling they seem to be a real cup team under Jurgen Klopp, and we know that Anfield has the atmosphere on a big Champions League night that can inspire these players.
Yeah, of course. Look, they were one game away from winning it, weren't they? They came up against a very good side in the final. And if anything, I think they'll be better in the competition this year. I know what Dale's saying about the about Mo Salah and his conversion rate. Yes, it could be better. But my word, I think there are a lot of other teams on the planet would love to have someone that bad in front of goal playing for them. I still think Liverpool can actually go further than Manchester City in the competition this year, purely because of their history in it. They know what it takes to win it. And there's that feeling around the club that they understand it, isn't it? You know, they really understand what those great European nights mean. Whereas when you think about Manchester City, the Etihad, it's still not warm to that competition ever. There's the booing of the anthem and the fact that they just never seem to really want to. Well, I know, look, they want to win it, of course, but it just seems to be losing something that Liverpool have in terms of determination and know-how when it comes to really going a long way in the Champions League.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Thank you, Derek. Let's just move on to the other topic I wanted to discuss about the FIFA Club World Cup proposition, shall we say, from Gianni Infantino to create this World Cup. And this is something that UEFA, obviously, Tom, have opposed quite vociferously.
Funny that. yeah, I mean, it'll obviously cut across the Champions League. That's the idea of FIFA, and UEFA will be looking at their cash tills and wondering if it'll cause them some problems. It's really weird, isn't it? We just don't seem to like the Club World Cup over here. We've never really got interested in it in the way some of the clubs on the continent have and overseas. I mean, you look at the pictures with Real Madrid celebrating winning in Abu Dhabi last December. You know, Sergio Ramos, a man who's won everything in the game, looks absolutely overjoyed to have won it. And I'm just not sure that anyone over here really gets that same feeling about it. Is it a good idea? I don't know. It's just a money-making prospect, isn't it, proposition for FIFA?
Yeah, I think so. And it's bad timing as well to announce something like this, Derek, given that the Saudis would likely be heavily involved, and we know about Infantino's relationship with the Saudi Crown Prince as well, Mohammed bin Salman. So it's bad timing. I don't think it's needed, is it, Derek?
No, it isn't. I mean, he's met bin Salman four times in the past year. Can't see anybody apart from FIFA wanting this competition. You wonder which clubs would enter firstly, and then why they would. Well, they would for money, because apparently it's £100 million for the winner. £100 million, that's a new right back. So, you know, the clubs will probably go there and they'll probably say, well, we'll jettison flying round to Tokyo for a pre-season tournament. We'll go here instead.
Do you think they will, Dale? I think they'll do both, wouldn't they?
They'd send
squads to both to try and make more money.
Yeah, possibly.
And then moan about players being tired 6 weeks into
exactly.
the season.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's been talked about in some big FIFA meeting this weekend or today and tomorrow, I think it is, in Rwanda. Why is this being held in Rwanda? Is it his wish called Rwanda? Oh, I've been dying to get
one. You crowbarred that one in nicely there, Derek.
I did. Oh, I can see the bullet ending before I had a chance to get that one.
Chaps, thank you. Tom, are you anywhere this weekend? Are you going to again?
Yes, I'm at Southampton, Newcastle, so not expecting the most high scoring of games, but looking forward to it. It'll be a good story, whatever happens.
Yeah, Derek's expecting Newcastle to win this weekend, so expect Southampton to score a few.
I can imagine.
Tom, thank you for your company.
Pleasure. Good talking to you both.
Thank you, Derek.
Cheers, mate. Cheers, boys. Cheers, Tom.
And we're going to finish this podcast with a look at the Football League in the company of Pete Farris, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross. Whoa!
Hi, my name's Pete Farries and I'm going to make it very simple for myself in the Championship this week. My nap is Norwich at 5-4. On Tuesday, they played Villa at home and they won 2-1. They've won three of their last four home games. Brentford, their opponents, who are 21-10 for this game, haven't won away from home, and on Wednesday had a physically and mentally shattering game against Preston, of course, losing in that absolute thriller. So Brentford have had less time to recover, have got poorer form, and will definitely, like I say, be a lot tireder. Norwich have won three of the last four home games, won on Tuesday, so have had more time to rest up, and are 5-4 odds against. It's as simple as that. This is as simple as that. And yes, sometimes the obvious ones in the Championship are the ones that do you, but really, as a punter, there's not much more I can do. Norwich at 5-4, my nap of the week in the Championship, whatever you're backing, very best of luck. Let's hear from Gav Puchalowski and get his thoughts on League One.
Sometimes you back a side to win on the basis of what they're doing, picking up lots of points, winning lots of games, scoring lots of goals. Sometimes you back a side to win on the basis of what their opponents are doing, and in this case I've got two to choose from. Two sides at home I fancy against poor sides, Gillingham 11-10 at home to Bradford. Bradford are hopeless this season and dropped to bottom of the table midweek. Scunthorpe 21-20 at home to a very poor Plymouth side, and I'm choosing Scunthorpe because their home form is better than that of Gillingham. So Scunthorpe 21-20 is my nap this weekend. Scunthorpe have lost the last four games straight, but against tough sides they've played Blackpool, they've played Peterborough United at home, and they lost away at Luton. Everybody's pretty much losing away at Luton, but Scunthorpe at home do score goals. Two against Barnsley, three against Rochdale, and last time they won at home was 5-3 against Charlton. Plymouth away from home, two goals in five games, three defeats in five. I think Scunthorpe have got the firepower to beat Plymouth Argyle. And Plymouth Argyle last time away from home did lose 2-0 at a very poor Oxford United. And I heard an Oxford United fan report that Plymouth were the worst side they have seen this season by far. And when an Oxford United fan says you're poor, you must be really poor. So my nap selection is Scunthorpe United to win at home to Plymouth at 21-20. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
1st of September, that was the last time Exeter dropped points at home. In the five home matches since, 5 wins, 13 scored, 2 conceded. In fact, that defeat to Lincoln at the start of September is their only home defeat since February. Forest Green's away record recently, 4 points from their last 3 on the road, looks okay until you realise they were at the teams who are 6th bottom and at the 2 teams who are bottom of the pile. And Forest Green might be 6th, but 10 of their 24 points have come in games against the current bottom 4. So you question how good they actually are. I was expecting a price of 4-6, 8-11 on Exeter, was considering whether that was going to be a realistic nap price. Then I logged on and saw they were 5-4. That's odds against for a side who have only lost once in their 14 meetings with Forest Green, and in their only 2 recent meetings at St James's Park in FA Cup and League last season, Exeter won both. Boil it down, this is 3rd at home to 6th, 2nd in the form table at home to 10th in the form table, and the home side are odds against. Even if none of the other stats were to lean in your favour, and they do, it would still be worth this week's nap on Exeter at 5-4.
That's it for the podcast this week then, folks. Thank you everyone that's tuned in and listened. Do make sure you check out all the betting on the William Hill website and on the app. A special thanks goes to Tom Hopkinson, our FWA guest, the chief reporter for the Sunday Mirror and the Sunday People. Don't forget, you can tweet using the hashtag YourOdds to @WilliamHill if you want to bet that's not priced up ahead of all the Premier League fixtures this weekend. Thank you again for tuning in. And if you're having a bet on the football this weekend, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.